Hello, I'm Tara, and we are discussing international business. In continuation with this, let's talk about multinational companies, or what we know as MNCs. Now, when you think of MNC, think of the names that come to your mind: Apple, Amazon. But is it only international companies? There are Indian companies also which are MNCs, because they are doing business internationally elsewhere. So, for example, if I was to ask you, Indian companies over and above your international Coca-Cola or what have you, you have a TCS, you have a Birla Group, you have a Tata Group, you have a Reliance Group. So, multinational companies are companies which are operating across international borders. They may very well have a parent country, a domestic country where they have their head offices. But they operate all over the world, whether it is on the supply side, which is their production, or it is on their demand side, which is their sale of their goods and services. For example, Apple, that produces iPhones, operates in almost 43 countries as far as its production supply chain is concerned. They have their iPhones being produced in Karnataka as well. In tie-up with companies, local companies and manufacturing companies, some of them owned by Tata Electronics. So, Apple is very much US-based originally, but it is production-wise, supply side, demand side in terms of sale, operating across the world. Now, it is not simply the production and sale, but also think about a multinational from a point of view of impact on the countries and the population across the world. So, for example, the facility that I was telling you about, which produces iPhones in the southern part of the country, provides employment to lakhs of people in the region. So, it is not simply a matter of their own benefit, but also it is benefiting the local population in terms of providing employment, sustenance, literacy, etc. So MNCs operate world over and share those benefits with their own, of course, bottom lines and their own people, but also hopefully have benefits for the countries that they're operating in, both from the supply and the demand side. In this chapter, we'll be talking about some of the MNCs, from what is some of the different MNCs, what are their motivations. While we're talking about the positives of MNCs, in the past I have mentioned and will continue to mention that there are negatives also. For example, there have been allegations of exploitation the world over, labor exploitation. There have been allegations of pollution world over. There have been allegations in terms of creating disparities in income distribution, etc. So, while MNCs have a lot of positive, they also come with their cons. So, we will try to understand a little bit more about MNCs and then also be talking a little bit about our Indian MNC scenario. Now, one of the things which when any country operates in another country is to deal with the regulation and the requirements of that country. Now, over and above regulation, you will be able to successfully operate in another country only if you are trusted, only if you have a reputation and you have a consistency with your image. For example, General Motors wasn't very successful in India. General Motors exited India twice, you know, came in, went back, came in, and haven't been very successful. And one of the reasons for that is considered. It is analyzed and considered that one of the reasons is that they had no consistency in their management. They had, I don't know how many number of CEOs change over their tenure out here, which didn't give a proper face. Also, they had a lot of, recalls. They had a lot of issues in terms of their product perception, and there was no consistency. So likewise, if there are too many policy changes, if there are too many management changes, if there are too many trust issues, then an MNC can lose their position of strength in a country, in one country or maybe multiple countries. So for example, Amazon, where there were a lot of their India operations, some of them, a certain element of their India operation was being impacted by frequent policy change, and they said that this is not desirable and it does not augur well for the business. So when it comes to MNCs, they have to maintain their image and reputation and business globally in a consistent manner. They cannot constantly be making policy changes, treating a country like come and go whenever you want, employ, lay off, whatever you want, because all of these things will severely impact the business. Now, while we're talking about multinational companies, there's also a variation of multinational companies, which is transnational companies. Now, transnational companies, it's very interesting. So when we're thinking of multinational companies, we think of them across industries, media, telecom, travel, automobiles, anything, even for transnational companies, we are thinking of, them across industries. But one very interesting variation is that typically a multinational company will have a parent company where they are headquartered and they are operating across the globe, okay, whether it is for production, whether it is for sale. A transnational company also operates across the globe. However, sometimes, and it is more from an operations point of view, not from a legal point of view, very often a transnational company is not really considered domestic to any country. For example, an HUL. We are all familiar with Unilever. Now, Unilever is a global company, but you can't really pinpoint its home country. So it is literally like in India, we think of their products, whether it is an Ayush skincare or whether it is, anything else. We think of their products literally as, Indian products. So a transnational company, though an MNC, is from an operational point of view, because they do so much, their operations are so streamlined to individual countries and so aligned to those individual countries, almost thought of as not really having any single domestic country, but, operating across. So this is primarily what you could think of as a, defining point in terms of a multinational company or a transnational company. Now, specific talking about Unilever, they have almost, they have like almost 400 brands across. In the US, they push mayonnaise. In India, they push a Vim or an Ayush or a, Lux. So they have created this whole philosophy of thinking globally, acting locally, hiring local people and enabling them in a manner that they are best attuned to delivering to the local population's requirement. They have people literally associate. I mean, if you go to maybe a small town or somewhere, they may not even know that Unilever, they may think of Unilever as an Indian company because they're so used to using their products on a day-to-day basis in their homes in India. So their thinking globally, acting locally, really, really helps them when it comes to, establishing a strong brand across individual countries and across individual population requirements. Now, for example, they have on a daily basis, studies show that on a daily basis, almost 3.4 billion people across the world. 3.4 billion, which is almost, 40% of the global population, are using Unilever products daily. Can you imagine their reach? And their turnover is roughly 60 billion euro. The last turnover, 60 billion euro. And almost 58 to 60% of that comes from emerging markets. So this is, would I call it a multinational corporation or a transnational corporation? Probably a transnational corporation more from this operational point of view, where they have managed to align themselves so closely to your requirement of individual countries. So that is a very, iconic example of how a company is operating across borders and how it is actually, global in every aspect, regardless of which country it may be headquartered in. So we think of it as much as a local company as a multinational. So this is how, companies can make a success of themselves by becoming very, very entrenched in the local, country's requirements, whether it is through management, whether it is through employment, whether it is through, if you go into the rural India, then you will find a lot of initiatives, semi-urban, rural India, you will find a lot of initiatives being done at a local grassroots level, where these, Unilever or other MNCs of that, of that status are taking so many social initiatives at those levels, which literally will not make those local people believe that this is a company which is not Indian. They will not even realize that it's an international company. So that is what your, transnational concept really is. And a successful MNC, whether you call it global company, MNC, etc. That is how these companies, make successes of themselves globally. Now, this gives you some of the, from a definition point of view, it gives you some structural insight into, how MNCs are characterized, whether it's from a technology point of view, whether it's reach, whether it is from an efficiency point of view, some of the key aspects of, things which are instrumental in driving MNC structures over and above just the size of these MNCs. Some of the top corporations in the world you are seeing here across industries, retail, energy, petroleum, technology, healthcare, and names we are familiar with: Walmart, Saudi Aramco, Apple, Shell, Amazon. So a lot of them are, interfacing with our daily life on a very, very regular basis. And they are multinationals in terms of being headquartered, yes, in a country. For example, Walmart is USA, Shell is United Kingdom, Saudi Aramco, of course, is Saudi Arabia. But they are impacting business and trade across the world. Now, Walmart in its avatar as Walmart is not there in India in terms of a Walmart store. But of course, we will be discussing about their takeover of our domestic company, and as we have already discussed, international trade can be in multiple forms and multiple structures in terms of how you make an entrance into any country, whether it's JVs, whether it's wholly owned subsidiaries, whether it's through FDI. So likewise, we have domestic MNCs which are operating all over the world across these various industries, if not many more, where, as I was mentioning, right, from Tata's to Birla's to TCS, so technology, textiles, various other industries, steel, etc. We have a presence elsewhere also through different structures. So let's continue to discuss this. Keep in mind that going forward, over and above just multinational corporations in terms of supply of goods and services and trade of goods and services, increasing focus is also going to be on the DMNE, which is digital multinational enterprises. The digital economy is already exploding, and going forward, the digital growth and e-commerce is going to be a very, very large contributor to this, to the global economy and the global trade. So we will be talking about the digital aspect of global trade also, which is obviously going to be having an increasing share in the future, over and above its growth already. So just to give you some facts and figures, the combined revenue of the Fortune 500 company is $41 trillion USD, and the profits, which is your bottom line, is almost $2.9 trillion. This of course has China in the topmost position. You have USA, you have your Walmart stores, as we saw in the previous chart. You have Walmart, which is at number one. Other countries contributing to this list of the Fortune 500 companies, other countries contributing significantly to this list are other than US and China are Japan, Germany, which have 41 and 32 companies respectively. So there is a mix of countries which are contributing to the Fortune 500 list, with China being just one company less than the USA in this whole list of Fortune 500 companies. So giving you an idea in terms of where China is globally in terms of its participation in global trade, in contribution, in terms of its contribution to the multinational stage of the world. Now, transnationality index is an index which kind of sees, if I have to put it in layman's terms, it sees the competitiveness, the position of a company, of an MNC, based on various aspects in terms of it's how competitive, how efficient is it seen in the international scenario. So you will take aspects of sales, assets, employment, various elements are going to be taken into account to calculate the transnationality index. For India, the company with the highest transnationality index has been ONGC Videsh, which obviously, in terms of these various aspects has ranked quite high. And hence its TNI ranking. So when we talk about digital multinational enterprises, obviously some of the the names which straight away come to our mind are Amazon, Apple, etc. And these are not just digital MNEs, they are also among the top 10 in the Fortune 500 list, as we saw. These are going to be the digital MNEs are going to continue to be very, very high participants when it comes to the global economy. Now, at a very micro level, to give you an idea in terms of India's positioning and India's potential when it comes to the digital global digital economy and global international trade, we are all familiar with Paytm, with GPay, with with the various UPI platforms that we use in India. And in India now, people have like pretty much stopped carrying cash. Even if you buy a cup of tea for 10 rupees, 20 rupees, people are making UPI payments for it, even for very, very small day-to-day amounts. And even unorganized vendors are accepting, just go to a railway station and a frankie seller or a chai seller outside is also accepting these payments. So very recently, the UPI, Indian UPI in July, was actually launched in France. So gives you an idea in terms of the reach and scalability and the acceptability of digital, initiatives from India globally. So that is a huge thing which has happened and gives you an idea that going forward, right now in the top 10 or that, Fortune 500, I don't know how many of our countries really feature in the, how many of our companies feature, but given India's growth potential and, acceptability, we are definitely poised to be participating in the DMNE space in a much, much larger scope. Now, digital MNEs can be of multiple kinds. They could be purely digital, completely digital, right from product to delivery to service, everything. Or then you could have, mixed modes. Like, for example, an Uber. You use the app, you use it online, but then a physical car comes to you and, take your ride. So there could be a combination of the product and services that are being provided to the consumer. For example, a Google or a Yahoo, they are completely, the search engine part of it, they are completely digital. They are not coming into your physical world. Whereas an Amazon or a Swiggy is coming into your physical world post your usage of the app, because you're actually receiving the car or you're actually receiving your food order physically. So it could be a mix of various forms. Now, there are other classifications. For example, you have internet platforms, completely like a Google or a Yahoo or a Bing, completely online. And then you have your digital solutions, enablers, like a software service or e-payments that I'm talking about. Then you could have your e-commerce platforms, which, of course, is one of the biggest forms that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, from e-tailers to basic, even forget your meals, even for a Blinkit, the way you have your Blinkit or you have your Swiggy, Instamart, or you have a, Zepto, these things, immediately, even for a 20 rupee, 30 rupee thing, you can have it delivered. So you have your e-commerce, which completely exploded, especially during the pandemic and post-pandemic. I don't think e-commerce companies were also prepared for that kind of explosion and growth in terms of the consumption patterns globally. And whereas it was a more of an urban phenomena prior to the pandemic, during the pandemic and post the pandemic, specific to India, the way the e-commerce business has become a part of our daily life and exploded all over is really taken it on a trajectory which is far steeper than anyone could have anticipated. And a lot of the e-commerce companies may not even have been prepared from an infrastructure, a preparation, etc. point of view to scale up at such a speed. But of course, you don't want to lose out on that growth. So all of them have, tried to keep up with the scale up requirements. Then you have your digital content, which could be gaming platforms, etc., data analytics, all of that, which are another kind of digital classification.